Wow. Welcome back, everyone. We are so glad that you are here again with us this morning. And I just have to say that worshiping with all of you last night was probably the highlight of my month, my year. That was fantastic to be in a room filled with women praising the Lord. And so thank you for sharing that with us. We are excited to be back again this morning, although our first session is probably not going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about some hard topics this morning, and we're going to start by talking about the idea of stewardship. So when we are, yesterday we talked a lot about who we are, who the Lord says we are, what Scripture says we are, being created in His image. And there is a level of acceptance that comes with that, because there are things about how He created us that we cannot change. I can't be 5'7", I am 5'3". So that's just not something that I'll ever be. As much as I'd like to have those long legs, that's not how the Lord created me. And so there's a level of acceptance that comes with that. But today we're going to talk about responsibility. And we have been entrusted with these bodies. So we're going to read from 1 Corinthians 6. We'll start at verses 15 and go through 20 as we start to explore this. Paul says, "Don't you realize that your bodies are actually parts of Christ? Should a man take his body, which is part of Christ, and join it to a prostitute? Never. Don't you realize that if a man joins himself to a prostitute, he becomes one body with her? For the Scriptures say the two are united into one. But the person who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. Run from sexual sin. No other sin so clearly affects the body as this one does. For sexual immorality is a sin against your own body. Don't you realize that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you and was given to you by God? You do not belong to yourself, for God bought you with a high price. So you must honor God with your body." And we talked about this just briefly last night when we touched on this passage, that Paul is talking about sexual immorality in this passage, but the principle, the application of it is still the same, that our body is not our own, that it was bought at a high price. And so if we think about the fact that not only did the Lord create us and fashion us, and so He is our creator, and we are a creature. And in that, he has ownership over us, but he also bought us at the high price of Jesus' blood. So he kind of double owns us. And our body does not belong to ourselves. We are to honor God with our bodies. And so today we're going to talk about what does it look like for us to be responsible with our bodies. And culture has all kinds of ideas of what that's supposed to look like. Every magazine that you see is either talking about being more sexy, or how to lose those pounds, or even how to accept your body as it is, all in the same article, or all in the same magazine. And so there's just this huge confusion over what are we supposed to do? What is healthy? What is not healthy? And so we have to begin to realize and think about our bodies in a different way. We are stewards. And a steward is someone, Ben Patterson defines it this way, someone who has been entrusted with the management of someone else's property and charged with managing it in that person's best interest. So what does it look like for us to manage our bodies in the best interest of the Lord, who actually owns them and has entrusted them to us? So we know that the Lord owns us, and yet in so many ways we sin against our own bodies. I love the way Paul talks about it, and he's actually talking about how husbands should love their wives as Christ loves the church. And he says, whoever hated their own body, but they love and they nurture it. But that is not what most of us do. We don't love and nurture our bodies. We either indulge them in our appetites, or we deprive them in our appetites, or we seek to punish them. And so we are looking at the ways today that we sin against our own bodies. C.S. Lewis, again, one of my favorites, I think it's one of Virginia's favorites as well, has a quote from the Screwtape Letters again. He says, humans are always putting up claims to ownership which sound equally funny in heaven and hell. Much of the modern resistance to chastity comes from men's belief that they own their bodies. And all the time, the joke is that the word mine, in its fully possessive sense, cannot be uttered by a human about anything. They will find out in the end to whom their time, their souls, and their bodies really belong. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is powerful. We do not belong to ourselves, not our time, not our money, not our bodies. And that it sounds equally funny in heaven and hell that we would assert ownership over anything. And so for many of us, that might cause us to feel some tension because we want to have the right to do with our bodies what we want. And we don't really want anybody to tell us what to do. So we need to talk about what does a healthy stewardship look like. But first, we're going to talk about I get the fun thing today. You got death, dying, and decay yesterday. I get abuses of the body today. So, or at least I get to start us off with that.
I'll finish up.
Yeah. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is some of the more extreme forms of ways in which women abuse their bodies. First of all, and some of these things have some very similar things in common. So alcohol and drug addiction are some extreme ways in which women abuse their bodies. Whether we are abusing prescription pills, whether we are indulging in alcohol to drunkenness, we have millions, and I read the statistics 2 or 3 days ago, we have millions of people who are suffering from alcohol and drug addiction. And this is a mistreatment of the body. And much of this has some things in common with another, which is eating disorders. Eating disorders like anorexia and bulimia. You also have women who have exercise disorders that are punishing their bodies brutally through exercise. And sometimes eating disorders and exercise go hand in hand. And much of that is born from a need to control. We need to, everything within our world feels like it's spinning out of control. And so we seek to control in any way we can. And so we self-medicate and we self-soothe through food, through alcohol and drugs, through punishing our bodies, cutting and burning, which I think you were the one that told me about burning. We have lots of teens who are coming up now that are inflicting brutality on their own body through cutting. And now we've understood that burning themselves with erasers, these are ways to seek to escape pain, to seek control, to seek some sort of comfort outside of the Lord. This is attempts to manage our bodies and our emotions. in really unhealthy ways. And so if you have had experience with an eating disorder, if you have relatives or anyone, we really hope that you will go and meet with Ella Walker Henderson from Living Bread. Her nonprofit is doing an incredible job raising funds to send women to treatment and to get them into therapy. She provides mentors and prayer and therapy. And so if you want to partner with her as a mentor or somebody who volunteers to pray with women, or if you need to talk to somebody, she is a valuable resource that we wanted to be here for you guys.
Christy, if I could just say something.
Sure.
I read a statistic that 8 million, mostly young women, have anorexia nervosa in our society now. 8 million. And there are many millions more that have some disordered eating. But I really appreciate high school students being here. How many of you are in high school? Thank
Great.
You for coming. My daughter works at my daughter works in a high school as a social worker, and we were talking about this issue, particularly the cutting, which I just didn't understand. I'm not sure I still do. But this is sort of getting to be a cool thing, evidently. And girls are cutting and putting themselves on Facebook or burning. And they're doing it. Used to be mainly arms and legs, but there seems to be a lot around the pelvic area. Mm. Think about what that is saying. Think about the pain that is revealing. And evidently they're telling my daughter it numbs them out. Mm-hmm. And so this is a tragic problem. And the other statistic is that people with serious disease, at least 20% will die if they don't get treatment. And this is killing us. This is killing our young people, our children. I know how stunned I was with that, but we need to understand, and if what happens, they get into it to be cool, to fit in, to get attention. They're hurting, and no one's paying attention oftentimes, but then it gets to be a habit of the body, and that leads to addiction. And so I was educated on that just recently.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched a video by a doctor named Daniel Amen, and I don't know much about him, so I'm not necessarily endorsing him. But he did, on a PBS special, a show on the female brain, and he said that we are not just impacting ourselves, we are impacting generations of ourselves through something called epigenetics, where we are actually changing our genetic makeup and we are passing that on. Talk about generational sin and brokenness. And so it is important what we do with our bodies because it affects the next generation, not just genetically, but they're watching. They listen to how we talk about our bodies. They watch how many times we talk about needing to go on a diet. They watch how restrictive we are with foods, how we label foods as good and bad. They watch the guilt and the shame that we mire ourselves down in. We are affecting generations of us.
And also, on that thought, people with severe disordered eating, women often end up being infertile. Mm. They damage their bodies that much. So that's really a generational problem.
Yeah. So another area in that we abuse our bodies is just in our relationship with food in general. We as women, as a society, I would even say, have an unhealthy relationship with food, most of us. Many of us seek food for comfort. We seek solace in food. We see it as reward, entitlement. I have been good all week. I deserve that whole chocolate cake. And I hope that you saw last night and this morning that in our food choices, that was very intentional. We had sweets. We had delicacies. We had treats. But we also had healthy options. And so for us to be able to say, okay, it is the Lord gave me food to enjoy and delight in. You see so much of Scripture, it was around a feast. Jesus was always eating with his disciples or with sinners and tax collectors. He talks about feasting in heaven. So we get to enjoy and delight in food and see it as a gift, to see it as nurture, as sustenance, as nourishment that then empowers our service for the kingdom. But most of the time, we're in a war with it. We have this love-hate relationship with it. We love to eat it, and then we feel guilty, and we feel like we have to punish our bodies either by restricting for the next day or by going and working it off really, really hard and sweating it out in the gym. Our portion sizes in our restaurants are out of control. When we go out to eat, we have to be the ones to be responsible just because it's on our plate. I've heard people say that they go and they split meals now because it really is enough to feed two. But we're not setting standards and rules here. Every woman is individual. You know, or need to know, need to learn your genetic makeup, your season of life. You need to begin to understand your own individuality. What does your body react to food-wise? Some people have food allergies and they can't enjoy those foods. And it wouldn't be wise stewardship to feed yourself those foods. So we're not creating a one-size-fits-all for every woman. But we actually have to take ownership in that area as women. We have to learn our bodies. As a 40-year-old woman, my body does not process food the way it used to when I was 15. And so what does it look like for me now to make healthy choices and yet still enjoy these treats that the Lord has provided in and to enjoy them with others, which we'll talk about that later. Oftentimes, we are filling a void with food. It is our appetites gone astray. We are seeking comfort or escape. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. And so there are many times that I am not eating to the glory of God. I am just seeking escape. Mike Cosper, a pastor, wrote an article recently called Grace-Based Dieting. And he said, food should be enjoyed as a gift and avoided as a master. It can master us in excessive consumption or in an obsessive and fearful nitpicking. So we have to look at food as a gift and nourishment. Virginia, what do you think about the neglect of our bodies? And
are you speaking personally? I think we neglect our basic needs. I think even in eating, to be mindful of calories all the time, we neglect some good things, mm-hmm. and we eat a lot of empty things. Mm-hmm. Artificial sweeteners, I think, are a gift and a curse because we get into an entitlement of, oh, I deserve. And by the way, I have a chocolate croissant waiting at home for me.
Yummy.
reward.
I enjoyed a Chick-fil-A biscuit this morning.
No. We do neglect our bodies. We neglect our appearance sometimes. We don't steward that well. And sometimes we get into a what's the use mentality. And I think it's, we get passive because the ideal just seems too far away that we talked about last night. Or maybe we do it in rebellion, sort of a countercultural kind of thing. I don't care look. But are we, in doing that, covering and hiding? And it can be a sign of illness when we don't care. When you're depressed, you don't care. So we need to look at that. It's not a one-dimensional thing. We neglect our health care. How many of you just love to go to the doctor? Especially preventive care like flu shots or GYNs.
It's easy. It's collective easy moan. That was a collective moan.
Yes. I'm 6 months late on that. That's how I feel about that. Get a good doctor. And this is especially hard during your college years. The infirmary doesn't cut it, does it? And you're away from home and you don't know where to go or whatever. Ask around and get some information on that. Sometimes we don't go because we're really fearful for what they're going to find. I confess that. That's sort of counterproductive, isn't it? Not willing to spend the money, hard to get off work. We have all kind of excuses. But a good doctor is essential throughout our lifetime, especially as we move on toward disease, death, and destruction. Another thing that we really ignore is sleep.
Another collective moan.
Okay, wake up. late last night, early this morning. It's indispensable to health. I don't think we realize what it does for us, what a gift it is. It restores us. Psalm 227:2 says, "It is vain to rise early and go late to rest." I think that's my life verse. I used to tease my sister. Proverbs 27:14 says, "He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse."
Can I tell my husband that?
But sleep is important, okay? There's serious health effects if you don't get enough sleep. I'm going to run through these, but I want you to understand, especially young people, that you get into a sleep deficit that can really harm your body. Listen to this. These are some of the serious effects of not enough sleep. Health issues, especially heart and diabetes, develop much more quickly if we don't get rest. It decreases our immunity. It delays healing. There are 250,000 car accidents attributed to sleepiness. One out of every five. They're job disasters. Ever heard of Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, the Exxon Valdez spill? Those were all attributed to people that were responsible sleeping on the job. If you sleep less than 5 hours habitually, your mortality rate doubles. That was stunning to me. When you don't sleep, you're sort of dumb. Your cognitive functions are affected tremendously. Your learning ability, you can't attend very well and concentrate. Your reasoning ability, your problem solving, your judgment, your memory. I remember to get up and come here this morning. This is good. Weight gain. Mm. This is a good motivator for us. The less sleep you get, the more hungry you are, especially fats and carbs. I thought that was interesting. If you get habitually less than 6 hours of sleep, you have a 30% more chance of being obese. I thought that was stunning. It ages your skin. And yes, I have slept most of my life. It just happens anyway. Sallow skin, puffy dark eyes, fine lines, and some of these can be permanent. And it leads to depression, anxiety, and emotional issues. It distorts your view of the world. A good nap sometimes can do more for you physically, emotionally, and spiritually than most anything you can do. We neglect rest. And part of it is that we're so busy. What's your schedule look like? You know, the Chinese have characters, and for the word busyness, they put two characters together, and the characters are heart-killing. Mm. It will kill our hearts. We're always in a hurry. There's no margin. We overbook. Does it sound familiar? We overplan. And especially of those who are involved in ministry. It's for the Lord. You have to give yourself away and sacrifice. And that is absolutely true. But God means for us to steward our energy and our resources. And you know, this is interesting. When you're in a rush, you pump out more adrenaline. Sort of that flight or fight. And it gives you a burst of energy. And so you get in a rush again. You get addicted to your own adrenaline. This has been proven scientifically. It feels better sometimes when we're on the go. But God meant us to have periods of rest in our lives. So schedule it. Be ruthless with hurry in your life. Create margins. Time to pause and think and be still. Not just a period of the day, but sometimes it's just really wise to step away from life if you can. Go somewhere. It also sounds a lot like Sabbath, doesn't it? The word Sabbath means cease. And God inscribed it in the very order of creation. Not because he needed to rest, but because he knew we needed to set a rhythm of life that is life-giving. And knowing how easy we were going to neglect it, he made it a command. It's one of the ten. We neglect it anyway because we are so busy. But it's not a duty. The Sabbath is not a duty. It's a gift. Jesus was a notorious Sabbath breaker because he knew that we can easily make rules about the Sabbath and miss the point. In fact, these Pharisees were always giving Jesus a hard time. And they had taken the law and really corrupted it in a way by getting down to the little, you know, how much rope you need to let down a bucket or if you need to let it down. They had 365 prohibitions around Sabbath. That's one for every day of the year. And Jesus said in the presence, as they were challenging him, or maybe they were fussing about the disciples picking corn, he said, listen, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It is a gift to us. And we can either be legalistic about it, about what you don't do on Sunday. That's not God's intent. Or we can receive it as a gift. It's an orientation. It's an attitude. of receiving, stopping and receiving. We're called to corporate worship, and that's a part of our rest. It's a unique time poised in God's presence. We're thankful. That should be a part of it. It expresses trust and dependency. It's looking at your life and coming, if you come here or wherever, and it's letting go. I'm looking forward to our worship time. Mm. In community, there's no substitution for it. The rest of that special day, and sometimes it can't be Sunday for those who are in ministry, working, but a day that is set aside, is that we need to do things, we need to keep from doing things that we ought to do. Sometimes I have my Sunday list, catch up. You know what I mean? All the things I've missed doing. We need to let ourselves play and relax without guilt, without apology. Mothers can create some pretty special times with this in our homes. We had a pattern, or really a habit, a practice, whatever you want to call it. Every Sunday morning, and this is when the kids were real little, all the way to when they were in high school, we'd have muffins in bed. And all in one bed, by the way. It's interesting with a two-year-old. You don't make your muffins real crumbly. They're sort of thick. But anyway, that was something we looked forward to, or donuts or whatever. And it was a mark of beginning a special day that was different. I like the family dinners on Sunday together around a table. I like dessert on Sunday. Extra helpings there. And other family stuff. I'm a country girl. We live out in Blue Ridge, and we've always had horses. And it was really a wonderful day to get on our horses. And we did this until the kids were gone and ride. So create. Be creative in that day. Do things that give you life on that day. Here are some symptoms if you really need to renew your practice of Sabbath. Have you really lost perspective? Are you chronically distracted? Is there no gratitude and joy? Do you just don't care about the things you used to care about? Are you impatient with interruptions? Are you busy all the time? Are you not honoring your limits? Have I sold it? It is a command. It should not be optional. And it's, like I said, a real gift. And speaking of play, whether you do it on Sunday or other days, it's a wonderful part of life. But you know, we're so utilitarian. We so want to produce something with our time. And sometimes we just need to do something useless. nothing accomplished, but accompanied by a lot of laughter and good memories. Oh, children need to play with you. You need to play with your children. You can learn a lot. There's a scene in Narnia that I just love. It's in the first book. You know the Chronicles of Narnia? And Aslan is the Christ figure. And he is sacrificed for the sin of one of the children on a stone altar by the witch. But he is resurrected. And Lucy and Susan come to try to care for his body, and all they see him in all of his glory there. And they begin to play. They begin to play tag and romp. And here's a quote. All three rolled around together in a happy, lapping heap of fur, arms, and legs. And whether it was like playing with a thunderstorm or playing with a kitten, Lucy could never make up her mind. Find ways to play. Some of you may play too much. There's a balance there. The only other thing I have to mention in terms of how we neglect our bodies is neglecting family meals. We do a lot of industrial eating just to get it in, on the go, in flight refueling, in the car, in front of the TV. Percentage of people now that eat out is way over 50%. I mean, all the time. And as Christy alluded to, there's a lot of table fellowship in Scripture. There's something that happens that is healthy and nourishing in so many different ways when you sit down as a family together. You talk. And a good rule to have at family meals is no tech stuff. Nobody doing this. Putting it away. Looking each other in the face. Noticing your children. Remember, as Christy said, you're setting a pattern for generations. And a lot of us have babies, and we nurse them, and it's nourishment, and it's comforting, and it's loving, and it's having a connection, and then we stop continuing to do that. We need to stop nursing, but we need to continue the nurturing. I really said that, didn't I? At a certain point, we do stop nursing our children. But we need to continue to nourish them. It's time to slow down and talk. And then we've missed the art of hospitality, I think. Restaurants, we consume. We're consumers at a restaurant. There's nothing wrong with going out to eat. We go out with friends all the time. But I have found myself, and I really make a confession, it's so much easier to do that than to prepare a meal. But sometimes just preparing something very simple, one dish, and sitting down with friends is nourishing. It's belonging. It's community. So these are some of the things that I think we've neglected. You have anything else?
Yeah, as well as exercise. I don't think we have a healthy understanding of exercise. The exercise industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. And so we are following the latest trends, or we've got all these different understandings of what exercise is, and we either completely neglect it, or maybe we go into an obsessive attitude toward it. I read somewhere that a Miss America contestant will exercise anywhere from 14 to 38 hours a week. But that is their job. And that is what we are comparing ourselves to. We do need to exercise and move our bodies. And I do not love it. That is not anything that I enjoy. I didn't grow up loving it. I've never loved it. And so, but we are body, mind, emotion, soul. It is all together. And so have you ever been sick, like physically and mentally and emotionally, you just got down and despairing? Have you ever been down and despairing mentally, emotionally, and physically you just felt bad? We are so interconnected. We are an embodied being. And so we have to be responsible to take care of our bodies. I read an article by Howard Hendricks, and he said that we have to prepare to get old. We need to be moving our bodies so that we can, as best of our ability, continue to take care of ourselves as we age. Not become a burden on somebody else. Now, that's going to happen eventually anyway, because that's part of living in this broken world still, where our bodies haven't been redeemed. But we can't neglect that. But we also can't be consumed by it.
The only other thing we have on our agenda is to talk about specifics and how we try to construct the body according to our own image. It's hard work taking care of this flesh. One of the issues is what we wear, how we dress ourselves. And boy, we could talk for that the rest of the day, I think, about that. What do we wear? And the issue of modesty. You knew that was going to come up sometime. Again, we have the attitude, it's my body and I can do what I want to. It runs deep. This pornified world that I talked about last night has trickled down to our clothing racks. Mm. I talked a little bit last night about what's available for children now. Moms, this is tough, right? Really tough. It's a legitimate way to express ourselves, to dress a certain way. We have our own style, and there's nothing wrong with feeling attractive and confident and put together. But we can also dress in ways to manipulate. Mm. And in the issue of honesty, we choose what we wear for a reason. So here are some questions we can ask ourselves. What are we really trying to accomplish by what we're putting on? Do we want a certain kind of attention to create an effect? Are we exercising power and control? And the way a woman dresses is powerful sometimes in a very destructive way. What would we lose if we stopped dressing in a certain way? Modesty isn't just what we wear or what we cover and we don't cover. It's an attitude. Mm. It's a mindset. It's also the way we walk, the way we sit, our eye-to-eye contact. My husband used to give my daughter's friend, my daughter went to Furman, so we had a lot of girls in our house, and they all became our daughters. And my husband would always say to them as they left, "Now remember with those guys, no prolonged handshakes or lingering eye contact." Teasing, it was teasing. But it's true. The way we handle ourselves can say a lot about what we're after. The way we wear makeup, does it enhance or does it just obscure? Mm. I didn't get a scarf.
I'm going to share my scarf, Pilar.
Pilar, I'm not asking, but you know. accessories. And mothers, this is a great thing if you're trying to... It's difficult with our young people. We know they're at a time in life that they desperately need to fit in. And yet we want to both demonstrate to them by the way we dress and help them develop standards and understand why they want to wear some things and why they don't. Accessories. Cool stuff can help in that area. Mm. And they do. They need to feel good about what they're wearing and how they're are presenting themselves. There's no easy answers to that. Christy just talked about gym culture. It can be unhealthy sometimes. It can be an addiction. My daughter-in-law, who's a beautiful young woman, she's actually sitting here doing the same thing I'm doing. She's speaking at a retreat this weekend. And she teaches at a gym a couple of times a week. And she's expressed concern about the influence of anything that she does on her 5-year-old daughter, my beautiful grandchild. And she was talking to her dad, who's a pastor, one time about this. And he, how can we as mothers have a positive influence and certainly not a negative one. And he said, honey, and protecting them from the culture, we want to do that. And he said, honey, and he wasn't rebuking her. But he said, honey, mamas need to deal with their own sin in this area. So I thought that was good advice. Other things that we do, facials, massages, manicures, pedicures, coloring our hair, elective cosmetic surgeries. It is easy, I think, to make rules. There are no rules. Sometimes we want rules because we'll know if it's right or wrong. And sometimes that's not the spirit of obedience. It's just keeping the rules. There are a lot of cases with deep scarring that surgery is necessary. I mean, you can get legalistic about that, but the main issue is what motivates you. The other issue is how much do we spend with this? Cosmetic industry is $189 billion a year in this country. Dieting is $40 billion. You know, it takes about $12 billion to run a small country, to provide for health and nutritional needs. We need to get some perspective here about that kind of stewardship. And moms, I'd just like to, I'm going over time. I'm sorry, Christy.
No, we're fine.
But mom, we're leaving a legacy, whether you are aware of it or not. Our children are watching. So we cannot say, do as I say, not as I do. We must be consistent and help them negotiate very muddy and uncharted territory for them, especially in a culture that is diseased regarding how we present ourselves.
Okay, we've got just a few more minutes because we've already gone over and we want to get you guys out to a break. But we want to talk about just some real practical things. We have talked about ways in which we neglect our body, ways in which we indulge our bodies. We've talked about ways in which we try to construct our own image. And I told you yesterday that we, inside your notebooks, we put a handout that said questions to help you identify yourselves. These questions are important for us to start asking. Why is it that I am running this marathon? It is not that running a marathon is bad, but am I doing it because I am trying to exert some control or I am trying to escape in some way? Is my family suffering because of me running this marathon? Why am I not exercising? Am I just too tired, and do I need to adjust my schedule and allow for some margin for me to be able to move my body and to be healthy? Why am I having that second piece of cake?
It's Sunday.
It's Sunday, yeah. So why do I want to wear that dress? Questions that we have to start asking, not is my skirt too short, but why do I want to wear it? Not can I wear a bikini, but why do I want to wear it? And we're not saying that these things are wrong. We're not making legalistic standards here. What we're driving for is the heart of the issue. What is going on within our hearts that is compelling us toward these actions? We have to begin to identify our own areas of sin, our own areas of weakness, and our own areas of temptation. I know for me that as I was working on this, I was so convicted because I don't love to exercise. And my husband approached me one day and he said, when I met you, you exercised more, you were doing yoga and you were walking. And he's like, why don't you do that anymore? And it did not go well for him. Because what I heard is, you're fat and I'm not attracted to you. But that is not what he meant, ladies. And I got angry, and I got self-protective, and I took it out on him, and I gave him the silent treatment for several days. And then when he would have the courage to bring it up again a month or two or three later, when my back was hurt because I'd gone out and tried to do some kickboxing class. I mean, I go from 0 to 60, and so he's like, okay, you're not taking good care of yourself. And again, it didn't go well. And so finally we started having this conversation, and I was sitting in a meeting, and it occurred to me that he wasn't saying I was fat. He wasn't saying he wasn't attracted to me. He was calling me out on my own sin and saying, you are not taking good care of yourself, and I want you to age well so that we can enjoy life together. And I can't punish him for that. He has to be able to approach me, and maybe he doesn't say it right, and maybe it hurts, and maybe I need to go back and clarify with him and say, hey, when you said that, you weren't actually saying, hey, you're fat. You don't, that doesn't look good. You need to fix that, you know. He wasn't saying that at all. But I needed to go and ask the question. I needed to say, hey, what were you saying? And it hurt me when you said it this way, but let me make sure I understand. And we need to be able to talk that way with one another. And he needs to be able to have the grace to approach us imperfectly. We need to give them that grace. But we also need to stand strong in the face of sin. And so if our husband is asking us to do something that is to sin against our own bodies, then we need to stand strong in that. And we need to pull community in around us to help us if we need that. If we need to be able to have somebody stand firm with us. We have to be in community on this issue. We cannot keep this silent any longer. This has been a silent killer for women. It's either killing us physically through eating disorders, or it is killing us mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We are enslaved. We cannot afford to be this way anymore. God has empowered us as women, and this is robbing us of the power. And so we need to be in community and talking about this in real, vulnerable, authentic ways. Most of what we are doing is making fun of ourselves. That's about as far as we'll go when we talk about it. Oh, I couldn't fit into my skinny jeans today. I've got my fat wardrobe and I've got my skinny wardrobe. Or my thunder thighs, or my muffin top, or my middle-aged middle, or my dimples on my butt, you know? I mean, and it's okay for us to poke fun if we're really comfortable and we're just poking fun, but so often that's just a cover-up for deep-seated insecurities.
And our children are listening.
Yes.
Our children are listening. I read one time, real friends don't let friends talk fat.
Yeah. So when I asked in some of the conversations that I've had with you guys, hey, are you guys talking about, hey, I ate 3 pieces of cake today. I don't know why I did that. Or I haven't worked out in 6 months. I just can't get off the couch. I mean, are we talking about that? No, because we're ashamed. We're covering up, we're hiding. We need to be having real, vulnerable, authentic communication with one another. We need to partner with each other in this. We need to hold one another accountable. We need to find a safe person. I said it in my community group recently. My husband took a new job, and he was asking for the group to hold him accountable on some things. And it was my turn, and I said, you know, I don't take good care of myself. I corrupt nurture, and I will pour out and pour out and pour out because it makes me feel good about me. But I don't take good care of my body. And then my husband doesn't get, he gets the leftovers. He gets what's left. So where do we create margin for ourselves to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of others? We need to be in real, authentic community about this. And ladies, when we affirm one another, it's so great for us to affirm each other and saying, you look beautiful. I love your hair. I love your dress. That is so pretty on you. That color looks good on you. That's great. But sometimes that's just us being lazy because it's easy, it's quick, it's the first thing we notice. It's the quickest, easiest way for us to compliment one another. I see my four-year-old niece who's spending the weekend with us, and I can't wait to go home and just play with her. And I see her, and the first thing I say is, oh, I love your pretty dress. And she twirls and twirls. And that's okay. But I also need to give her some real strong, godly affirmation, like, Claire, you bring me such joy. You are such a delight to be around. You've got a beautiful heart. You are a strong, smart little girl. It is not bad for us to compliment one another on our beauty. It was created and good for delight. But we need to begin to compliment each other on other things as well and recognize the ways in which God has created us in his image. How has God uniquely gifted the woman sitting next to you? How has he gifted her? Affirm her in that. Challenge her in that. And be willing to move in toward one another.